Welcome to the Fanboy Factor podcast. I am your friendly neighborhood J-Man. With me is our resident comic book historian, Brian Isaacs. Brian, how's it going, man?
Doing good, sir. How are you?
Not too bad. Brian, we have a special guest with us today.
Yes, we do. With us today is Danny Fingeroth. Danny, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
How you doing, Danny?
I'm good. I'm in the middle of recovering from the whirlwind of Wizard convention, because I'm working with Wizard these days as a programming consultant, so I organize and moderate panels at all their shows. So I just got back from Cleveland, where I took a short side trip to Jerry Siegel's house, the house where he and Joe Shuster created Superman back in the 1930s, so that was pretty cool.
Oh,
wow.
That's cool.
What was that like?
You know, it's a house. I mean, you know, it's a house that people live in, but it's also a tourist attraction. I mean, you have to know where it is and how to get there and hope that your cab driver can follow the GPS to get you there. But, I mean, it's very cool. It's got some signage on it and some, some text on the outside explaining, why the house is important. And it's been spruced up. But on the other hand, it's just like a neighborhood where people live, and you can sort of imagine, what it was like for just these two guys back in the 30s. Superman came out in 38, but I think they came up with the idea several years earlier and tried it out in different incarnations. But you can just sort of get the feeling of just these two kids in a, kind of middle or lower middle class neighborhood of kind of neat little homes. I think there was a writer named Mark Tyler Nobleman who wrote a book about Siegel and Shuster, a kid's book, but very thoroughly researched. He actually traced the number of steps from Siegel's house to Shuster's house. Now, Shuster's house is no longer standing. There's a fence with kind of the first Action Comic story along the fence. But the Jerry Siegel house is there. So it's just like a block where people live. And I'd say the house is not a museum. People actually, live in the house. On the other hand, it's, this sort of, holy ground for people who love superheroes and pop culture. And, so it's sort of, amazing in its ordinariness.
Do you know, how many visitors they get?
That's a really good question. I mean, I went, I knew I was going to the Wizard Show, the Cleveland Wizard Show, so I made sure to take an extra day to be a tourist because I'd never been to Cleveland before.
Yeah.
So, I was there, but it was 10 degrees out and icy and snowy, I have no idea. There's an organization called the Siegel and Shuster Society that's run by some relatives of Siegel and Shuster, or at least Siegel, I think both of them. And, some other interested comics people, Mike San Giacomo and some other people in Cleveland who are dedicated to kind of making sure that the world and that Cleveland itself remembers that that's where Superman was created. They have a Facebook page, is probably the best place to get them, called the Siegel Shuster Society or the Siegel and Shuster Society. And that'll tell you more. But I mean, there is a core of people who don't want that to be forgotten, because everybody thinks of New York and L.A. As sort of the places where comics and pop culture happens, and maybe Chicago. But Cleveland, between Harvey Pekar and American Splendor and Siegel and Shuster and Superman, is a pretty important spot in the comics history books.
Did you ever read that book by Brad Meltzer called The Book of Lies?
The Book of Lies? No. Is that a novel?
It's a fictional novel that he wrote, but it also he also touched upon the Siegel House also.
Well, he's actually the person who was behind raising funds. And now that you mentioned, I think he was, one of the main forces behind raising funds to preserve the house.
Right. Yeah, I remember when he did that. Yeah.
Yeah, so he did a campaign to raise money, so he's very, very involved with that.
It's a pretty good book.
But, I mean, it is interesting because, I know that one of the things that you asked me to come talk about was Will Eisner Week. And, you know, it's you know, Siegel and Shuster went to a high school called Glenville High in the neighborhood called Glenville in Cleveland, which is where the house is. And that's a high school that's famous not just for them, but a lot of people who would go on to become prominent in all sorts of fields, in journalism and theater and film, went. It was sort of the upwardly mobile neighborhood in Glenville, heavily Jewish, but, you know, lots of other ethnic groups, too. And not unlike that, Will Eisner, you like the way I made that segue? Will Eisner, Bob Kane, Bill Finger, Irwin Hazen, Stan Lee, all went to a high school in the Bronx called DeWitt Clinton High School. So there is, I find it interesting for that generation of artists and writers and creative people who were financially unable to go to college or weren't inclined to go to college, kind of like Glenville and DeWitt Clinton and maybe music and art, high school music and art also, where a lot of the Mad guys went, and other high schools. Those are sort of the Harvard and the Princeton and the Yale of comics. You know, those were where those guys really developed their skills and networked with each other. And it is funny that there are these corresponding high schools in the two cities.
Now, Will Eisner Week is, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's pretty much an annual, it's a celebration of the work of Will Eisner, his, you know, pretty much his graphic novels that he created. And I know this year in particular, it's also the 75th anniversary of his character, The Spirit.
Right. Will Eisner Week, Eisner's birthday is March 6th. So this coming March 6th, he would have been 98. Mm-hmm. He died just 10 years ago at age 87 in 2005. Up until the end, I mean, I think, really just before he passed away, he was working on a new graphic novel. So, yeah, he was an innovator and a pioneer and a trendsetter in comics, you know, in the 30s. 40s and 50s. Then he took a hiatus from commercial comics and did a lot of military comics and industrial comics, a lot of humor books. He was always active. But then in the late 70s, with something called The Contract with God, which I think many of your listeners have heard of, he was one of the first people to do something called a graphic novel. You know, we can split hairs all night, and I'm capable of it, about what was the first graphic novel and, you know, who really invented it. But basically Eisner was one of the first major forces in what we've come to know as the graphic novel. So Contract with God, The Heart of the Storm, The Dreamer, The Plot, many... I'm leaving out that, he did like a couple of dozen in the 25 or more years from the late 70s till he died. So Will Eisner Week is put on by the Will and Ann Eisner Family Foundation. Mm-hmm. And it is a series of events. It's now international. And we've gone from starting with one event in 2009 to like three events a couple of years later. We have over 50 events in probably 20 or 30 cities this year. Wow. Celebrating Will Eisner. And what that means is celebrating literally Eisner and his work, or the work he inspired, graphic novels in general, free speech, creativity. We cast a pretty broad net. We really approach a lot of people all over the world, though they approach us because they love Eisner's body of work and his legacy. And we say to them, we'd love you to do an event. It can be as simple or as complicated as you want. It can be like a bunch of people talking about Eisner in the back of a comic shop. Mm-hmm. It can be an auditorium in a major university. It can be something in a theater, anything that they want to do. And we don't so much supervise it as kind of help them facilitate it, get them posters, get them publicity, and we're kind of a clearinghouse. That's what I do. I'm the chair of the Will Eisner Week Organizing Committee, which basically means that I am constantly nagging people to, like, tell me what you're doing and when you're doing it, and emphasize it. You know, and I've gotten very good at nagging over the years, a specialty of mine. But, so, you know, so if you go to either WillEisner.com or WillEisnerWeek.com, you can see the list of cities, and as I say, they and also Will Eisner Week, we are fairly loose with our definition. It's technically, you know, March 1st to 7th every year, but we've been known to go, you know, to start in late February and go into later in March. I think we once even had an event in April, but we do try to keep them within the March 1st through 7th period. So, I mean, I'll just read the list of some of the cities that, and I think starting tomorrow we'll have the list up. But everywhere from Portland, Oregon, there are several events, including one with Matt Wagner, who's doing some new spirit material, and Savannah, Georgia, and of course, New York. There'll be a couple of events at Society of Illustrators, Los Angeles, Dallas, Austin, Texas, Baltimore, Gainesville, Florida. We have some Cambridge, Mass, Burbank, California. And then we have Glasgow, Bologna, Angoulême, Athens, Rio de Janeiro, Sao Paulo. So we really have stuff going on all over to celebrate. You know, Eisner in particular and sequential art, as he termed comics, you know, sequential art comics, graphic novels, whatever you want to call them, words and pictures together. And the idea of free speech, which, as we know, is under constant attack now in a way that who would have imagined, you know, several years ago. So that's Will Eisner Week.
Wow.
Hey, Danny, what about Will Eisner attracts you? Like, how did you get involved with Will?
You know, I'll be betraying my age, but, you know, most people...
Listen,
you know,
there's no worry about that. We're all oldies here.
Okay. When I was a boy, I was a big comics fan, duh, you know, big shock. And in 1965, you're not that old, maybe you are, the go-to gift, you know, holiday gift that year was Jules Feiffer's The Great Comic Book Heroes. That was really one of the first books to take seriously comics and superheroes, and it was Feiffer talking about the golden age of comics, which he had experienced as a youth, and Feiffer, of course, has gone on to be Jules Feiffer, you know, novelist and cartoonist and screenwriter and playwright and everything else. And so in that book was a reproduction of a spirit story, and I had never heard of the spirit, but I really love the story, and the way that Feiffer wrote about the spirit and Eisner and just the golden age creators that he worked with, and he worked with Eisner and for Eisner, you know, made me want to know more about the spirit. So then a few years later, Warren Publishing, Harvey Comics put out some reprints, and then later on Warren, and then Dennis Kitchen, of course, who's done so much publishing of both new and old Eisner material, the spirit, and other material, and graphic novel material. So I got hooked on it, and I realized what was special about Eisner. You know, both the stuff, the spirit material, and the graphic novel material, there's just something very human about it, something very, you know, it could be dramatic, it could be humorous, it could be sentimental, it could be hard-nosed, it could be all these different things. It kind of really demonstrated, you know, in a very visceral way, not just in like an intellectual way, but in a real gut fashion, the way that Eisner was special, and the way that Eisner, even with the spirit, or especially with the spirit, but, you know, wanted to take sequential art comics to another level. You know, I mean, that was one reason. The spirit was originally and mostly published in newspapers. You know, it was in 1940 when this comic fad was happening, and newspapers were kind of, you know, puzzled as to why so many people were buying comics, and they wanted to get in on the craze, so they hired Eisner to do a comics insert called the Spirit Section, a syndicate called the Register and Tribune Syndicate. And so, you know, when you, especially in those days, syndicated cartoonists were rock stars, you know, the Al Capps and the Milton Caniffs of the world. And so Eisner was glad to be able to have a chance to do that. And so the spirit was, you know, while a kid could read it, certainly, and get it, you know, a lot of it was written on a more sophisticated adult level.
Right.
So that, I think that's, so it was the Pfeiffer book that got me into being aware of Eisner and then those other comics, and I kind of gained knowledge of Eisner over the years. Of course, it wasn't, you know, and then it wasn't that easy in the pre-internet days. You had to, like, actually, you know, search out in, you know, in an active manner in a library or, you know, one of them kind of places. And then Steranko's History of the Comics also had a lengthy interview with Eisner, which was probably one of the first big interviews done with him, in the modern, it was still 45 years ago, 1970, 71, 72, but, you know, it was just fascinating to hear Eisner talk about what he'd done, and this is before he even started the graphic novels. So all that little by little made me realize that there was this guy, and on a personal level, I mean, I think we were talking, you know, about the Siegel and Shuster and the Dewey Clinton connection. I mean, the idea that Eisner had a similar background to my family, to my aunts and uncles, to my parents, was an interesting kind of alternate universe to me. Like, gee, look at that. While my family was doing what they were doing, here were these guys who were my kind of creative ancestors. You know, they're the creators and developers of comics as a business and as a medium. So I found a personal connection with Eisner and his whole generation as well.
Oh.
That's kind of a long answer, I guess.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was Eisner who deemed the term graphic novel, correct?
Well, you know, that's where there's much contention, especially on the internet, where such things become magnified into giant causes. Eisner was certainly the popularizer of the term. You know, I think it, you know, there are those who have found the term used previously or similar terms. I think Eisner believed he coined it, although later on, there's 100 interviews in which, you know, I'm not sure what they all say. I mean, I don't, you know, but he was certainly one who popularized it. And Contract with God was probably the first thing that was high visibility that was called a graphic novel. You know, and then it became, you know, a marketing term. Suddenly there were Marvel and DC, God bless them, were putting out, you know, graphic novels that were really, you know, long comic stories. Then we get to that whole question of what is a graphic novel? You know, is it just a long, you know, is a 75-page Spider-Man story, you know, whether it's, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, does sheer length make it a graphic novel, or is there some other, you know, Art Spiegelman, I think, had that definition that a graphic novel is a comic book you need a bookmark for. You know? Eisner's story that he told many times is that he had this, you know, he had intuited that there was an audience of readers in the 40s, right, and 50s when he was doing comics for a general audience that liked the medium. They were, you know, they enjoyed reading comics, but they had outgrown the, you know, superhero and teen romance and other stories, you know, but maybe they would be open to reading sophisticated literary stories done in that medium. And so that's, you know, and he figured correctly. I mean, but that was sort of what led him to do a Contract with God and to, you know, I think he sold his business or put it on hiatus and really took a year or so just to do that book because his hunch was so, you know, his gut feeling of that was so strong. So he had finished it and he wanted to show it to a publisher, and he called the publisher he knew, and he said, "I want to show you something." And the guy said, "What do you got?" And he knew if he said, "It's a comic," the guy would say, "Don't bother coming in," you know. So he said, "I got a graphic novel." And the guy said, oh, I'd love to see that. You know, that's something interesting. And he went in, and then the guy said, oh, well, it's a comic book, you know. But, I think he eventually had to go to a different publisher. But, I mean, you know, the way he told the story anyway was that he sort of came up with it on the spur of the moment. So I think it's a term that had been around, but Eisner put it on the map, you know. If you Google, you know, if you have nothing better to do and Google origin of the term graphic novel, you will see this is a subject of way too much debate on the Internet.
Yeah,
everything is.
It still seems to be like a topic of debate because now it's just like, for a while, it's just like graphic novels were being considered like original pieces of fiction, and then you had your trade paperbacks, and now people are calling trade paperbacks graphic novels.
Well, I mean, it becomes a slippery slope because, I mean, even something like Mouse was originally serialized by Spiegelman in Roar magazine. So, I mean, technically, you know, that could be quote-unquote a trade paperback, although I think his aim was always to make it into a full-length book. I mean, the way that, say, you'd find chapters of an upcoming novel in the New Yorker or a magazine like that. Nobody calls the eventual novel, you know, collected short pieces from the New Yorker. It's a novel. It just happened to be served. So, yeah, there. And as I was saying, I mean, you know, is the greatest superhero story in the world a graphic novel? And it probably is. You know, I mean, the death of Captain, you know. So it's both. It's, you know, like much, you know, comics, like, you know, like any commercial art form is both art and commerce. So graphic novel is both a literary term and a marketing tool.
Mm-hmm.
I question whether a 3-page story is a graphic novel, but I've seen people refer to three, you know, I mean, sort of it becomes
that's when it's a marketing term.
Right, that's when somebody unless it's like so profound, you know, like, unless it's the most profound 3-page story, but even then it's still not, at the very least, when you go into a bookstore, if you should go into a bookstore, you know, which is increasingly, you know, but I mean, up until maybe 10 years ago, you would find even the most serious, the most violent, the most sexually graphic, the most, you know, science fiction-y, every genre of graphic novel was found in the humor section of the store, right?
Right.
So at least now, you know, that it's a marketing term, at least, excuse me, there is a graphic novel department for it to be in. You know, and that goes for online, you know, shopping as well, you know. So I think it's a, you know, it's been a good thing in that sense. And then like every other form of expression, is something, you know, high art or low art or literature or genre, you know, then you can, you know, kind of debate about those, you know, subcategories, but at least there's a thing where you go to that department and there are graphic. Now, of course, you know, like comic books, you know, are often neither humorous nor, and they're often magazines. Graphic novels are often nonfiction. You know, I mean, that's certainly one of the most popular genres, at least among creators, is, you know, the nonfiction novel, which is, I don't know what that's, you know, that's sort of contradiction in terms right there. And then, you know, graphic, I mean, there are some people who, you know, I still encounter people, I'm sure you guys do too, to whom graphic means pornographic, you know, like,
right.
You know, so the, you know, so even that term, which we think has become so accepted, is still, not universally known. Look,
it's a bit charged.
Huh? It's charged.
It's a little charged.
Yeah. But it seems to be the most, you know, it seems like comic book, like it seems to be accepted. I mean, it's funny, you know, I mean, we, you know, because of what we do and our interests, you know, live kind of in this comics bubble, but I was, you know, I got in a cab to go to the Siegel & Schuster house yesterday in Cleveland, and it was a cab driver. He seemed like he was from Eastern Europe, you know, his English was not great, and I said, I'm going to the place where, you know, where Superman was created, and, you know, it took me, and he claimed to not have any idea who Superman was. I said, you know, the guy who flies with the red cape and the S. And he sort of humored me and, like, vaguely, you know, pretended vaguely. So, I mean, it's interesting, you know, right? Even Superman, who we think of as, well, everybody, you know, anywhere must have at least have seen the image of Superman, know what that is. I mean, it's just funny that, you know, that not everybody knows that. Not even if somebody in Superman's birthplace, you know.
It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Danny, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Let's see, I'm trying to think. Well, if you want to know more about me, if you haven't had enough after all this, DannyFingeroth.com, and also I'm on Facebook a lot. That's my social media of choice, although I do tweet occasionally. So thank you guys.
Yep, and we'll
have, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for coming on. We'll have a link to your website.
Great. Oh, let me just plug one more. You know, and Will Eisner Week is www.willeisner.com and willeisnerweek.com. You can find out all about Will Eisner Week, which is starting in earnest in just a couple of days. And, you know, there should be something going on not too far from wherever your listeners are.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Appreciate it.
All right, take care. I'm going to hang up now.
All right,
take care. Bye-bye.
All right, Brian, that was our guest, Danny Figueroth.
Yep.
So you have Will Eisner Week coming up.
By the time this one, as you're listening to the show, you are in the middle of Will Eisner Week. Yeah. So pick up, you know, not just support Will Eisner, but, you know, it's pretty much just you look up a lot of artists who are out there today.
Yeah.
And one of their number one influences is Will Eisner, so.
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? And I find it weird that, I guess, not that this history is being lost, but maybe that's what happens. It's just history gets lost to time.
It does, but, you know, it's great for events like this just to remind people.
Yeah, what it's about.
I mean, and definitely, you know, I just want to recommend just one of his major, you know, one of his books called The Dreamer.
Yeah.
Which pretty much is a first-person account of Will Eisner's start in the golden age of comic books from the ground up. And it's an interesting read because you start to see the birth of Superman and Batman, how Eisner was kind of pushed by his publisher to create a Superman ripoff and then ended up getting sued and stuff. So it's just like, it's the actual birth of the golden age. So it's an amazing comic. You know, I'm hoping this week to at least every day do a write-up of one Will Eisner story. That's my goal.
Hey, what was the book you mentioned about speaking of Superman? The Big Lie, is that what you said earlier?
Book of Lies. That's by author Brad Meltzer.
Okay.
He wrote, he's done some DC comic work, Green Arrow. He's the one who put Roy Harper on the Justice League.
Yeah.
When he rebooted the Justice League after Infinite Crisis. It's an interesting book. It really is.
I'll check it out.
Yeah. Highly recommend it. It kind of compares the characters. It's Superman's father was, not Superman's, but Siegel's father was actually murdered.
Yeah.
And so it kind of, then the main character of the books, something happens to him that is almost life-imitating art, and then there's this big, it's a thriller, it's a good mystery.
Cool, well, let's check it out.
It's been, sorry I'm not doing it justice. It's been years since I read it. It came out in, 2008, and that's when I read it, so.
Yeah, it's fun. No, I'm going to check it out. It seemed interesting.
Very interesting.
Speaking of interesting, talk about segues.
Yeah.
How about this week's Gotham?
Okay, let me go officially on record.
Should I play some drums or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, Brian, what were you going to say? I shouldn't interrupt you.
Best episode yet. Holy crap, this is what the entire season should have been.
Okay, before we start getting into in-depth about it, I think I came to a conclusion personally about Gotham. you know, a lot of what both you and I keep going back and forth is how much they're cramming all this mythos in, blah, right. blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, and part of the problem is you have a Batman in your mind. I have a Batman in my mind, and we're pretty close to our Batmans.
Right.
You know, what they should be or what they should not be.
Of
clearly, this is not going to be any version of Batman that we know. But
right.
it's okay, because you know why? I don't know what, like 40-odd years ago, they had that awful Batman 66 on television.
Yeah.
And that was just another version of Batman. You know, maybe it shaped comics for a while at that time. Maybe
It did.
Okay, but that is not the quintessential Batman.
No.
So what I guess I'm trying to say here is, whatever happens with this show, it's never going to be the quintessential Batman.
But my complaint has always been the way they've been putting in all the Batman mythos. It's been shoehorning it. This episode showed how to do it right.
Right, but I guess what I'm trying to say is, I've been in my mind, I'm trying, not that I'm trying to justify the show, but I guess I'm trying to, in some way, justify the show and how it's not syncing up to what you know about Batman, what I know about Batman, and all the history of Batman. So, it was just that whole Batman 66 thing, you know, what I'm trying to say is, it was a really good show.
Yes.
Because I like this show, and I always liked, but she's a bad mamma jamma, man.
Yeah, I mean, her subplot, I wasn't too thrilled with. You know, we saw the doll maker finally, and I'm not a big fan of gore, so her ripping her eye out was a little...
Wow.
For an 8 o'clock show, I'm sorry, it was a little much for me.
Okay. It was out of nowhere.
Oh, I thought it was a badass move, and I think they could have done it in a non-gory way.
Were there any production pictures of her in an eye patch?
No, not before
there
the
was,
show.
Right?
Not before the show. After it aired, yeah, for the next week episode.
But, like, up until this point, there has not been an eye patch episode or, like, a picture of her. But for some reason, I had in my mind, when that happened, an image of her in an eye patch.
Yep, nothing.
Oh. Wow. So, yeah, I did not see that coming. When he went up to her and started talking about her eyes, I'm thinking, she's got nothing now. What's she going to do?
I know.
And then she grabs a spoon. I'm like, what the fuck is she going to do with this spoon?
She's going to jab it into him.
Yeah, I thought maybe up his nose. Who the hell knows? Oh, my God.
Did not see that one coming.
At all. But then the other thing I didn't see coming was Alfred getting shot or shot.
Stabbed, yeah. Stabbed. That one kind of threw me for a loop. So there's conspiracy going on at Wayne Enterprises.
Yeah.
Not too sure how I feel about that, but now, I'll see how that plays out.
I'm going to call on your wisdom here. Was that character, was he from any...
No, he was created for the show.
Show, okay.
Yeah.
You know, initially, I didn't like Alfred at all.
Mm-hmm.
But now I do.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's one of those things you got to stick with it.
Yeah.
And like a moss, it grows on you.
And then the other subplot about, Barbara... teaching yeah. Selina on how to use her own sexuality. So here we start seeing more of the birth of Catwoman, too.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I was just like, wow.
But she walked away from it, which is interesting. But the seed has been planted in her head.
But it's just, the thing that bothered me is, it's like, where the fuck did this come from, Barbara?
Yeah.
I didn't realize you were that much of a bitch.
Yeah, it was kind of weird, too.
Just kind of out of left field.
Yeah.
So against her character, but it's, you know, it's not a perfect show.
Yeah.
But let's tackle the main point now.
What's that?
The Red Hood. I bitched and moaned when I heard about it. It's one of our shows here, but damn, they handled it well. This is, I saw one person compare it to Nolan's Batman.
Okay.
Where Batman was bigger. It was an ideal.
Yeah. Okay.
That's how it is, and this links into the Killing Joke too, where it's just where that comedian, the pre-Joker, is handed a mask by two thugs and say, "Yeah, well, you know, lots of guys use this mask."
Yeah. Okay.
So I was just like, and then the ending when the kid takes the mask, it's just like, it's an idea now. It's just, we know Joker is eventually is going to get it. But, you know, I was worried that it was going to be the Joker up front. Like, you know, I think a lot of people were.
Right. It's funny because I was just about to say that I liked it. I was hoping you were going to like it because it was a good idea, and it was an idea, you know, like you just said.
Yeah.
And they did. They handled that one well.
Very. It's, oh my God. I'm sorry. It was like, also just the way it was shot, all the outdoor, it's just, it looked beautifully shot. It almost looked like a film.
Yeah, and you know what else was nice? It really wasn't Villain of the Week either.
No.
It was, like you said, subplots, continuation of subplots.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is the deal with Fish's number? Yeah, what's his story?
I don't know. It's just like
I don't think he's under as much control as led on to be.
No, well, in the episode previously, it seemed like he got, like, you know,
almost lobotomized.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. It's just like, you know, like, okay, Bullet Thunder.
But he was not like that.
No, it's just like, okay, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of curious because it's just like, Butch has the old way of doing things, and the Penguin is just trying to really, after all this plot, he thinks he's on top now, and now he's trying to pull his way in.
Yeah.
And Butch is trying to push him, pull him back, saying, nope, nope, nope. So I do like that.
But
like I said, the main plot this time around, damn, hit all the marks.
Yeah, it was definitely, it was a good show.
It really was.
Bullock headlines again. I like when they go out there and he's asking Gordon about Tompkins. It was great. You got laid. Are you with details?
The bald guy who was the leader of the gang, what was his name? I swear it sounded like they were saying Deathstroke.
Yeah, it did sound like that. I didn't really take too much note, but that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it was just kept saying, it's just like, I kept rewinding, it was like, did they call him Deathstroke?
Yeah.
I got a little confused on that one, but, you know, minor.
Yeah.
Like I said, the entire episode, I love, the thing that I really loved about it was just the cinematography of it. It's just like, everything is all gray and drab and dark, and here you have this bright red hood.
Yeah.
Like I said, it looked like a piece of film. It was just cinematically beautiful. Well done, Gotham. Thank you.
But listen, there's only 4 episodes left.
Only 4 episodes? What is up with all these
seasons? I don't know.
It's like, wait a minute. They're all ending early. But Flash is
high units for the next 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
They said, like, they're not coming back to what, March 17th?
Oh, my God.
And is Arrow on hiatus, too? I don't know if it's hiatus, but...
No, okay. Arrow's new. Arrow's going to be new.
Okay. But Flash is on break until March.
And then we got Agents of Shit, S.H.I.E.L.D. coming back.
Is that
back.
Coming back? When's that coming back?
By the time this shows up, it'll be back. Oh, okay. Who cares? And I'm more curious about how Agent Carter ends.
Yeah, I'm still behind on that. I'm like, I think I've seen the first 4 episodes, so I'm a little behind.
Mm. Just a little.
Yeah. Are you still following it?
Yeah, I like it.
Is it good? Good.
Like I said, it's still a lot better. It's not perfect.
Yeah, well, look, it's a TV show.
Yeah.
As long as you get entertained, that's what matters.
Yeah, and then, you know, iZombie's going to be starting up soon.
Yeah, so we got to see some screeners about it.
Yeah, we got the first 4 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different from the book.
Yeah. I think I don't want to say it's as bad as World War Z, where they just took the title of the book and slapped it on the movie. But it is an interpretation, I would say.
It's
definitely an adaptation.
It's more hipster zombies, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree.
My wife really loved it.
Did she?
It wasn't bad. Like I said, the book is kind of out there.
The book, she is a... Doesn't she end up just being a gravedigger?
She's a gravedigger.
Yeah, with other supernatural beings, right?
Yeah, she's got a friend who was a ghost who died in the 60s.
Right, right.
A friend who's a were-terrier, and they keep making fun of him. And then the antagonist is like, an ex-mummy or something. The book is a Vertigo title, so it's a little surreal and out there a little.
Yeah, a little bit.
And then, you know, you got these team of monster hunters, but this is completely different. And it's...
It's sort of like a cop show. It's sort of like ER.
Yeah.
Zombie in it.
Quantum Leap, you know, when she eats the brain, she gets the memory.
Yes, that's really good. And that's clever, though. I did like that.
I mean, for people who are looking for an adaptation, a strong adaptation of the book, you're going to be disappointed. I'm sorry. But as an original TV show, I didn't think it was bad. I felt like some of it, you know, some of the concepts I've seen before.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't bad. I wish, you know, CW all the luck with it. I'm curious. I'll probably watch it just for the heck of it.
Yeah, because you have to, because we're going to be talking about it.
But, you know, the first four episodes weren't so bad. But like I said, it was just, like, completely different from, you know.
I think once the show... It's sort of like Gotham gets going a little bit, and you see where it's going, you get a better feel of it.
I think one of the parts that just really kind of annoy me, which I don't understand, is even if she turned into a zombie, why would she isolate her entire family?
I'm not crazy about that as well, but more what I'm not real, even more crazy about is that cop. I don't know. He just is like, I don't know if he's trying too hard.
Douche.
Yeah. I like her, and I like the intern or the doctor she's with.
Yeah.
A good dynamic together.
Yeah.
And the antagonist, he was all right, but I don't know. Something about that cop I'm just not crazy about.
And I do like the fact there's only two of them who are like, well, obviously there's an army of more being made.
Yeah.
By the antagonist, but it's just like, yeah. I do like the fact that this, like, not all of them are like that.
Yeah.
There are some mindless zombies out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, she hates the taste of brains, and finding different ways to mix it up is kind of interesting, it's entertaining as all hell. But, you know, it's just like, you know, I didn't, you know, like I said, it's...
Don't expect a true adaptation.
No, it's not even close. It's like the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Yeah.
It's, you know, but, you know, it isn't bad. Like I said, it's a hipster zombie show.
Yeah. When does it start? It starts in March, right?
Yeah. Mid-March. So, very soon.
Yeah, I know. It's March is next week. I keep thinking March is a month away.
Yeah. By the time this airs, we'll be in March.
Yeah, exactly. It's true.
God, so since we're so wrapped up in Toy Fair, we didn't get a real good chance to talk about this one.
What's that?
Oh, come on, Spider-Man and the Avengers?
It's old news at this point. Boring! It's not at all, and actually, we're just because it's been talked out, but an angle that hasn't really been, we haven't talked about, I'm sure you've seen that they're talking about having a black Spider-Man.
Yeah. And
but not just a black Spider-Man, but a black Peter Parker.
Black Peter Parker. And people are going, I mean, I saw somebody post there's a petition going around, and I'm like, wow, that really makes you sound like a racist ass.
Yeah. What are your feelings on that?
Honestly, I thought Andrew Garfield did a good job. I don't know why he got fired.
Yeah.
I can't seem to find a reason. I think he pissed off one of the heads of Sony or something.
You think so?
I thought I heard that. You know, I can't confirm nor deny that, but that's what I swear I thought I heard. Either way, I don't care. You know, it's... I think I'm more pissed off these annoying fanboys won.
Yeah.
You know, all the bitching and moaning about the secret, you know, they can't do Civil War without Peter Parker. And I'm like, it's a different fucking universe, people.
Yeah, all that crap is ridiculous. I think I would rather see Miles. If they're going to do Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I would rather see Miles because I like the character. I mean, if you're going to go in a different direction, totally different direction, which it's, you know, look, I'm going to see it either way.
No, yeah.
But I think I would like to see what they do with Miles, because I like Miles as a character.
I mean,
if they want to make a Black Peter Parker, I'm going to go see it. I don't really care.
But, I mean, here's the part that annoys me. Is it's like they want, now it's not just a Black Peter Parker. They want to go with a young Peter Parker. And it's just like, oh, my God, really? Can't we?
Well, that's why I think they should go with Miles, because Miles is...
Exactly.
He is a young Peter Parker. And,
right.
You know, I don't know.
It is like... Let's have an old Peter Parker, an older, you know, 20-something Peter Parker as the mentor.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down with that. Maybe
handing down the mantle, just being like, you know, pick it up after Gwen died, and just like, it's too much for me, I can't handle it. You got, you know, great power, here, go for it.
I'm totally down with that idea. Which, was it an Elseworld? Not an Elseworld, it wasn't a what-if. When he got hurt, he broke his leg or something like that, and Mayday took over. His daughter took over.
No, he lost a leg.
Is that what it was? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was MC2 universe.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I'm down with seeing something like that.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah.
I just don't want a young Peter Parker again. It's stop.
Yeah, because then it just calls for a reboot. It just calls for, we don't need another reboot. We don't need another origin. Exactly. It just, them doing that just makes it an open invitation for a reboot, which they do not need. What we need is a story, a good story, and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Just have, like I said, Peter pass the mantle.
I like that idea, actually. Seeing an old guy, you know, maybe swinging the webs a little bit, but I don't know. Sort of like Batman Beyond.
Yeah.
It's not that old.
Yeah, like I said, you know, just, you know, still having, you know, hold up, can't handle it anymore, and decides to quit.
Yeah. Huh. I'm down with that.
Yeah.
But in either case, we still don't have really any kind of confirmation on... Oh, no, we do have confirmation that he's going to be in Civil War.
He's definitely going to be in Captain America Civil War.
Okay.
That's when he's going to be... That's his introduction to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
So...
2016.
Being hopeful that he's going to make an appearance at the end of Age of Ultron is totally unrealistic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, let's face it. They shot the Swarmer scene, like...
Yeah, right before.
Yeah, a week before it got national release. Because I say that because I saw the film as a screener a week before, and then I heard about the film, that thing being shot.
Did you really?
Yeah.
And then they had a different ending at that point?
They didn't have any ending. It was just, it just ended. There was no after credit scene.
Gotcha.
It was just, that was it.
Yeah.
That was, the ending was the ending. You know, you saw Thanos and that was it.
Yeah.
And, but no, it's just like, they decided to end, you know, they got the game. I mean, that's why it's, you know, Evans was shooting that film Snowpiercer, and he had a full-on beard, and if you look at the scene, he's got his face covered with his hand. That's why.
Was that the movie he was shooting?
I think so.
No shit.
Yeah.
How about that?
But he had his hand up over his face because he wanted to cover up that beard.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, it's... They shot that during the screening. Yeah. The New York Film Festival was going on when they shot that.
How about that?
And then they ran it over to that one piece of film over to the New York right before the screening.
Yeah.
And that's where it first airs. It was on a separate reel.
Huh. Interesting. Well, so Spidey's going to be part of it.
And yeah.
Do you know how the deal works? Do you have any...
Sony still has ownership of Spider-Man films.
Mm-hmm.
Disney does not seem dime one for it.
Okay.
But in a film like where Spider-Man is appearing in this Captain America film, Sony's not going to get a dime from it.
But if Sony makes a Spider-Man picture, it's going to be the same Spider-Man?
Yes.
Okay.
They're going to maintain the continuity. That's the agreement.
That's good. I'm glad that they worked something out.
Yeah.
That's good.
But, you know, like we've talked about several times, I think it's better off that Spider-Man wasn't a part of the Marvel Universe to begin with, because I feel we wouldn't have gotten all these characters that we did.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I dislike it because now it shows that everybody's willing to work together.
Except Fox.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, let's blame Fox for that one.
That aside... We'll get to see Spider-Man. It's not so much that I don't really care who makes a Spider-Man movie.
Right.
It's cool to see Spider-Man as an Avenger, you know, or part of the bigger universe.
Yeah, like, you know, part of the bigger universe. I mean, either way, it doesn't matter to me. Because I grew up so everything was so compartmentalized.
Yeah.
The old Marvel universe used to be, it's just like, you had your X universe, you right. had your Spider-Man universe,
right,
and then you had everybody else.
Right.
And that's how it was back in the 70s and the 80s.
Right.
And part of the 90s, and then, you know, all of a sudden.
And they would do, like, team-ups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for the, you know, every once in a while there was a crossover and stuff, but right. now it's more of a, since we're, like, really on top of crossover and event overload, now they had no choice but to make everything one big universe. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, but like I said, it's nice to see that they were able to work it out.
Yeah.
Makes everybody happy.
Not right now. I still can't believe someone started a petition to get, you know, keep Peter, it's even called Keep Peter Parker White. I'm like, oh my God. Do you realize how racist that sounds?
It's terrible.
Diversity for diversity's sake is never a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm all for diversity. I would be down with Miles Morales, but come on.
Well, speaking of changes, I know we haven't talked about this.
You're right.
What did you think of Aquaman?
My problem is, I don't have a problem with, you know, he looks badass.
Yeah.
He looks more like Namor than he does Aquaman.
Yeah. Jason Momoa.
Momoa, yeah. But again, this fucking washed out color bullshit is getting fucking fast.
What was cool about the image was Unite the Seven.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I'm done.
I thought it was a cool image. You know, like you said, he's more, a little bit more Namorish.
Yeah.
You know, the whole blonde hair thing, whatever.
That doesn't bother me one way or another.
You're right. It's washed out. Can we just, don't you have a fear that this whole movie's going to look like that?
It comes from Zack Snyder. He's done this before.
Oh, God.
Even this fucking artistic styling.
Just give me a little bit of color.
Oh, my Christ.
But, you know, listen. Nobody should be talking about all Aquaman can do is speak to fish anymore.
No.
With his cat in his role, man.
Well, they took it from the Peter David run without the, you know, hook hand, but he was more Conan back then than he was, you know, Aquaman.
He definitely looks Conan in that picture.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not, like I said, my complaint is the production photo. It's funny because you see, they've made the entire announcement, like, what was it, how many months ago when people were like, who are the seven?
Yeah.
It's like, stupid, count it off. Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, 3, Aquaman, 4, and then who else is getting him? Let's see, Cyborg is going to be in this. So who are the, five. So who are the other two, you morons? Flash and Green Lantern.
You know what I thought was odd about the move? Was they released it at night.
Yeah.
It was weird, like they just, I don't know, why not?
No fanfare.
No fanfare. And from what I saw, most people dug that picture. So, I don't know. At least we got a nice, besides the color and the whole whatever he does, that whole filter, he got a good look at him. We still haven't got decent look at Ben Affleck, and we know what Superman looks like already.
Yeah.
And we got a pretty good idea of what Wonder Woman looks like. Filtered, of course.
It's...
Have they changed their mind about Flash and are going to let Grant...
Not that I heard.
Custard, whatever his last name is.
No, Gustin, no, I haven't heard anything. Stupid.
Yeah, it's a shame.
And, you know, it's... Now the big question is, with all this diversity, if they can actually... There are two... If they don't pick Hal, people are going to go apeshit. If they really want to go diverse, they could go with the new Green Lantern, Simon Baz.
You think they will?
I'm just saying if they want to.
I think they go in the middle and they do Jon Stewart.
No, no, I mean, that's the logical choice. But if they,
yeah.
They might, you know, you got to understand this is a corporation thinking. These are not comic fans. They might think, okay, we got Cyborg. We got our black character. What other race can we put in here?
Understood. I agree with what you're saying.
Whoever plays it, fine. You know, whoever it is, fine.
But yeah. Hang on a sec. Before we leave Simon Baz, is he still that big of a character in the DC Universe?
I don't follow Green Lantern, so I couldn't even tell you.
I don't really... I mean, I think he's in Justice League of America, maybe?
Not even anymore. It's not even Justice League. Canada United.
Yeah, is that what it is?
I don't even know what it's
he
called.
He seems to have gotten pushed aside.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I would like to see Hal, but just because, to me, Hal is Green Lantern.
Well, I know that. That's how I feel, too, but, you know, we are not...
Yeah, I know. They got to do what they got to do. I'm fine.
Got to appease everybody.
Yeah. No, that's understood.
And I saw something. It's just like there's a new power ring on the Justice League, and it's a female. So
yeah.
Some people are saying it's just like she might be the Green Lantern too, and I'm like.
But her ring is from the crime syndicate. It's a Peter ring.
But at the end of Geoff Johns' Green Lantern run.
Yeah.
He did those future things that he likes to do.
Yeah.
And he has Simon Baz training the first female Lantern who's the same person.
Interesting.
So, again, this is, you know, we're talking about marketing and Studio 101. They could go with her as the Green Lantern. They may stay away from Hal just for the diversity's sake.
They may stay away from Hal because of Green Lantern, the movie.
I think everyone.
You know?
Who knows? You know, like I said, we're not the studio execs.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think if we were, I don't think Warner would be in such a friggin' hole it is. We can't do any worse.
I will tell you that when I saw that picture, I got a little bit excited about Justice League. I'm sorry, Batman vs. Superman. I got a little bit excited about it. But again, you know what? There's something about, and maybe you can agree or disagree, there's something about him as Aquaman doesn't seem to fit in the way the other guys look. He does not, how can I say it? What am I trying to say? He doesn't seem to fit the theme.
No.
Too realistic or something like that?
Like I said, he looks more like a Conan than he does a superhero.
I saw today that The Rock saying that the Shazam movie could happen sooner. Did you see that?
I also saw that Wonder Woman might be filming in fall, so who the hell knows?
It's been, you know, stamped by Warner's approval.
No, I mean, also just, what's her name? Olivia, oh my God, what is her name?
Olivia Wilde?
No, not Olivia Wilde. Olivia Wilde.
I didn't see Newton John.
You know, that Waller is going to be played by,
I know you're saying. I can't think of her name either. I just got physical on my mind now.
God, thank you. Viola Davis.
Okay.
She was on the red carpet for the Oscars, and Country Music Television asked her about it, and she said that she's going to be playing Waller. But personally, until I see an official thing, I tend not to believe it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if she plays it, great. She doesn't.
God, man, they got to get these things moving. It's taking so long.
I mean, at least Viola Davis looks closer to her first comic version than, you know, the real thin one we have now.
Yeah.
So, see what happens.
Mm-hmm. You want to cover one more thing and then wrap this up?
God.
Supergirl?
Why not?
So we got, really, the casting news is coming out for Supergirl. They just cast her mom.
They cast her mom. We also heard that she's definitely getting a costume.
Yeah, what did they say about that?
They really didn't say too much about it. They're kind of vague about it.
Huh.
They just kind of said, oh, yes, she'll have a costume.
I'm kind of excited about this.
But then they said that, I'm still waiting for the hate mail about, you know, a black Jimmy Olsen.
Is that definite?
That is definite.
Yeah, okay.
It doesn't matter to me. And
this, though, this bothers me more than Black Jimmy Olsen.
Oh my God, Cat Grant is going to be in the series.
Yeah,
played by Calista Flockhart.
Oh my God, why her?
I never liked this woman to begin with. I fucking hated Ally McBeal.
I've never seen it. She does nothing for me.
My wife used to watch Ally McBeal, and she's fucking rail thin, no boobs, does nothing for me. I'm sorry, I hate to sound sexist, but it's just like she was the object of men's desires, and I'm looking at her like,
She's not that character. Now, granted, they're probably going to take this character in a different direction.
Right.
But still, I don't know. Whatever. Even in Superman right now, Clark's working with Kat. She's still
a sex bomb.
Yeah, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not Ally McBeal. Come on. And besides, how old is Ally McBeal at this point? Oh, my God. So what do you got going on this week now that we're post-Toy Fair?
We are post-Toy Fair. I am going to be trying to, if I can get my ass in gear, I am hoping to do, and for 7 days, an article a day about Will Eisner, maybe reviews on some of his books, and I definitely want to write something about. This year also marks the 75th anniversary of his character, The Spirit.
I can't believe that. 75 years.
75 years of pretty much an unknown character.
Crazy.
And it's, you know, The Spirit was very, I don't know, it just kind of opened my eyes to what comics could be.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, I'm just a huge Will Eisner fan, so I'm hoping.
Did you get into him when you were younger?
You know, this is what I can remember. Danny was talking about Warren Publishing doing reprints in a magazine format. And I swear to God, I remember going grocery shopping with my mother.
Yeah.
And they were in the newsstand section of the supermarket. And I would stand there and read it, but I just didn't get it back then.
Yeah.
And then I picked up, you know, when I was doing some more serious comic collecting when I was in high school, I picked up this book about comic strips.
Yeah.
That were in newspaper comic strips. And here was this entire section of The Spirit, and it just blew my mind. And I talked about it with my local comic shop, and that's when I got into kitchen sink reprinting it. And that's when I fully just got my friggin' Eisner on. And, you know, I was following The Spirit. Then I found out Eisner had these other books, and he is a contract with God. He's a New York Jew. I'm Jewish myself, so he just spoke to me on that level, too.
Yeah.
So it's just, that's how I just really got into him. And I read, and I needed to read more and more and more and more. And it's just, I just became a huge fan. I really did.
Very cool.
You know, so, you know, I want to honor the guy as best as I can.
Yeah, that's good. But, you know, you're going to try and put out an article every day this week?
I'm going to try. Yeah. Big word there, try.
Yeah. That's cool.
What about yourself?
I am wrapping up an internet show that's 2 weeks late. The news might be a little stale, but oh well. So by the time actually this gets aired, the show should be done.
Very cool.
I'm also going to have, again, just like you, fingers crossed, I hope to have a couple toy reviews out.
Yeah.
I'm way behind on that stuff. So, but you can check me and Brian out on the casterscorner.com.
Right.
You can also check me out at yfnjman.com. Nice. And our old shows on thefanboyfactor.com.
And you can also check us out on the iTunes and the Stitcher.
Yep.
Subscribe.
Yeah, and we've had some pretty good interviews the last couple weeks. So yeah.
Take us on the go.
Listen to us and tell your friends. All right, Brian.
Yes, sir.
We'll call this one.
Yeah. Drop the mic.
You have a good week, man.
You too.
I'll talk to you.